I tried to figure out what would be a way of plugging into what might be some of your agendas, which I don't know anything about, and participating in some of your contractual arrangements of being here, which I don't know anything about either. But I tried to anticipate what you might feel would be at least somewhat helpful in your dealing with what I would like to use as a catch-all phrase or a catch-all statement, if I can use that word, statement. Vicar supervisor transaction relating to caring and counseling. It sounds like an awful lot, and we'll talk about what that means much more empirically rather than theoretically. Knowing the circumstances that I'm in a course now, which is a day and night kind of a thing, and I didn't really have time to present a paper, nor did you, I think, you really want one all the time, I felt that it was my freedom to rearrange your contractual arrangement with his. So this is what I'm about to do, and then we'll get into it as quickly as possible, knowing that one of the gentlemen that's here has to play the organ for a communion service at 3 o'clock. So we're kind of extra pressured at this time. Let me just run through what I believe is the ground rules of what we're about to do. First of all, it's the obvious is that there'll be a change from a single personnel to a shared personnel. There'll be three of us involved in the interaction or transaction. Secondly, my focus will be much more empirical, that is, personal, than theoretical or, if you will, impersonal. And thirdly, my plan is to possibly cover, in part at least, the four things that are on your agenda, as I believe, on your printed out agenda. In part depends on how, what I mean by that depends on just how much we can get covered today and how much your responses will be to what we're about to share with you. Okay, first of all, personnel. I would say that when I talk, when I say something, I carry with me not only the thoughts and the experiences, namely the transaction with these two great guys, but the background of some guys who are in absentia, guys like Dr. Milt Cernett, who's on the faculty at Springfield now, was vicar in 66, and Raj Colley, a multimedia guy, and Ron Daly, who's in a parish in Waukesha in Wisconsin, Larry Hauser, who is out further west in Wisconsin. And I'm also going to keep in mind the present vicar, Carl Rose. Vicar Carl Rose, who happens to also be from Wisconsin. We don't seem to get guys from too many other places, which is all right. And then, of course, my own experience. I believe it was about 13 years ago. Bill Otte is here with us. You'll get to hear from him. He was vicar at Capitol Drive in 1970 to 71, in a very different kind of a situation. That was the year that the senior colleague of mine at Capitol Drive became president of the English District, Dr. John Baumgartner. I can call him doctor now because he's got not one but two, I understand. One from here and one from Carthage College, also in Wisconsin. Bill was thrust into a very demanding, extra demanding situation, and I considered him my assistant, more so my associate, and I really depended upon him for spiritual reasons, emotional reasons, and certainly professional. And Walt Oman, who is with us, we also hear about, was vicar 1971-72, so it's rather fresh and up to date. Now, the focus, again, let me talk about that for a moment, and I'm going to hurry along, not wanting to, but because of time I have to do it. We will focus on some personal experiences of ours with what I like to call vicar supervisor transaction relating to pastoral care and counseling. Now, let me take care of that flare-up word called transaction. I bounced off my thoughts on Paul Getting and some others, and they said, you better explain what you're talking about there. Well, without getting into I'm okay, you're okay, let's just say that I'm not using that, the TA business, okay? I'm just using the word transaction in this way, meaning meaningful experiences between two persons who have volunteered to participate in a mutually helping relationship, okay? That's what I'm talking about, transactions. So anything you read by Harris and Bernie, just put on the shelf for a while. I'm not going to talk about that. That's not what we're here for, as I understand it. Also, let me say that this is not really particularly my bag to stand up and say things. I'm more of a facilitator kind of a guy. If we had lots of time, what I'd prefer to have done is got a bunch of vicars who are going out and who have been on vicars, mix them up with you and give you case situations and really deal with it that way. But that's not what I had time to do, nor what is on the agenda. Okay, let's start getting into what we're going to do. I think there ought to be some limitations put on upon our transaction, if you will, our current transaction. And if you can keep these presuppositions or ground rules in mind, we might just get to the thing to talk about, respond to. First of all, it's a total and absolute assumption that both guys, both persons involved, are persons in Christ. As Dr. Teachin said, if you don't have that, you don't know what it's about. You're not in ministry. It's a different ball game. It's most important for me always to remember as a vicar supervisor that this is a guy in Christ. And he expects that I am a guy or a person in Christ. That's our point of contact. That's what we begin with. Secondly, I'm picking up something from, or borrowing something, maybe it's stealing, but it's called borrowing, from Bill Hume in his letter that he had sent to Paul, and I had a copy of it, in saying that really to supervise anybody in counseling or in caring has to be, to be able to do that, you really have to be trained to do it. You have to be trained to do it. You're exposing yourselves or availing yourselves to an opportunity to at least think about the necessity of being sensitive to the possibility of training. We can't assume that everybody has all the baggage that is necessary for a training by way of supervision of somebody in caring and counseling. That can't be a thorough assumption. But nonetheless, I think we can have some things in common, because we do have some things in common, with or without all kinds of background. Another thing is, what you're going to experience, I hope, is that the most authentic form of training, vicar training, comes from experience. And now let me qualify what I mean by experience here, and just listing a few other words that I think are all-inclusive of the total thing, total phenomenon. When I mean experience, I'm talking about intellectual experience. I'm talking about emotional experience, and you can hook in there mental, but I prefer to use the word emotional. I'm talking about behavioral experience, and I'm talking about spiritual experience. None of these are in necessarily 1, 2, 3, 4 order of importance. They're all important, but we ought to just keep that in mind when we're talking about authentic training and authentic supervision of one another. And that's also, by the way, what I'm inserting in the word transaction. Okay? This kind of transaction, I think, is the word that means to cross over. You cross over into one another's place, into one another's lives. And therefore, you do get involved into your intellectual dimension, your emotional dimension, your gut stuff, your spiritual dimension, and certainly your behavioral. Okay, what we hope, therefore, to experience is that there would be some of this kind of thing shared by Bill and Walt in some rather personal and anecdotal data fashion. I think one more thing I'll say, and we can pick that up much later and talk about it, because I think it's very crucial for one's attitude as a vicar supervisor. And it's crucial for a vicar to be aware that he's sensitive to this concept or idea. Not all vicars are gifted carers and counselors. Not all vicars are gifted carers or counselors. And I have to say also along with that, not all pastors are gifted carers and counselors. I find that out the hard way and the real way. So I'm sharing something very personal with you. That I think we might want to pick up later, or it might be built into the rest of your program. I hope it is, because it's very, very important, I find. It's a good operating agenda. Okay, here's what we're about to do, and now we're going to get into it. I've been saying what we're about to do, now I'm going to get into it. I've asked Bill and Walt to share this time with me, because I feel that you ought to hear from their own primary experience with me, and in some instances, let's see, Bill was alone, but Walt, you were together with another pastor, Bill Hughes and I, we have a multiple staff, so that you get a little bit more objective data coming across, and that you just don't hear me coming down a list and say, hey guys, this is how I did it, and it's the best way in the world, which it may not be for you. But at least I can share some things through the transaction with these two great guys, these guys in Christ, these persons in Christ, as I call them, persons in ministry in Christ, that I think you might be able to appreciate and enjoy. So how we've done this is that I'm going to ask them now to respond to a couple of questions. And I know I'm risking vulnerability and everything else, but I'm also trusting our loving relationship when I ask them to respond to these couple of questions. There are kind of three ways of going about the same thing. And here's the questions. I ask them, using a recalled description of an experience with me in a transaction relating to an actual pastoral care or pastoral counseling situation, would you freely share how you were helped in that transaction? That's one way of asking the question. Another way is the one that we're not always so anxious to risk is this. Using the same or a different situation, would you now freely share how you were not helped in a vicar-supervisor transaction with me? And one that I didn't ask them yet, but I thought there should be some spontaneity and authenticity and honesty on their part, is this one. They'll get even with me, I'm sure. Is using any of the given situations you've had so far or another one, would you freely share what you would have hoped to have experienced in our transaction to help you? I've got another one waiting for you. Depends on what you guys do. Okay. I'm going to call on Bill Oddie because he's got to, as they say, split out by about 10 of to play the organ for the communion service. Bill, would you respond to these questions?
We're loaded because Walt and I agreed that we were both going to get up and say we never had any transaction because the door was always locked and there was a sign that said, do not disturb. So now I've gotten even. The one experience that stands out, I guess, the most in my mind for this type of situation, I don't even remember the gentleman's name, but we got a call one afternoon that this man was in the hospital, was dying of cancer, literally dying, within a matter of hours or days at least. We didn't know he was in the hospital. No one had ever told us. And we found out why. The man was a Mason. His wife and children were quite active. But he hadn't been around, and his wife was a little bit afraid that because he was a Mason, we wouldn't take care of him. We would look down upon him and just ignore them. When this call came in, I don't remember the exact circumstances of why it fell in my direction, but Pastor Ed called me in and said, here's the situation. I can't go this afternoon. It may have been three other counseling appointments, I don't know. But he said, let's sit down and talk about this before you go. I think this was in fall, if I remember, and I had a lot of anxiety as the story came out, because first of all, I had never really met a Mason that I knew of. Secondly, I had never called on anyone who was dying of cancer. And I had never been involved in this kind of a situation. This is where the transaction came in. I think we spent 45 minutes that afternoon before I got in my car and went to the hospital talking about whether I felt I could go minister to a person like that. My reaction and fears of going to minister to someone who was literally on their deathbed. And how would I handle those situations? I wish I could remember the details of everything we talked about. I wasn't calmed down completely by the time I left, I will say that. But I did have the knowledge that we had set up that I was to call Pastor Ed back when I got back and let him know how things turned out. Well, I made the call, and I had devotion with the man and with his family. And before I had a chance to call Pastor Winters back, after I got home, the hospital called and said the man had died. So if we had transacted another hour, I wouldn't have made it. But I did appreciate... <That's wrong. laughs> I don't think I would have gone. I would have put it off had we not talked. And I would have put it off had we not agreed that we would clean out afterwards my feelings and my reaction. And we did. We had a good half hour, 45-minute session again after that, talking through how I felt, how they reacted, this type of thing. Another situation, not quite as involved or quite as complex. Young man in the parish came to me and said that... This was not by going to Pastor Ed first. He came directly to me. My office was in the basement, and the kids all flocked to the basement, and everybody else went upstairs, it seemed. But this young man came to me with stories of visions and dreams and ecstatic experiences, things like that. Not that he was trying to tell me that this was the greatest thing that ever happened to him. He was saying, what do I do with this? How do I handle this? Well, I said, gee, I don't know. Let's talk about it. So he and I talked, and then without telling, I think his name was Mike, what I was doing, really, the next time Pastor Winters and I passed in the hall, and we said, you know, hey, how are things going? Which was, by the way, our primary means of communication. Since there were the two of us there, and only two, it wasn't a two-hour-a-day situation where we sat down and talked. It was back and forth, how are things going? Got any problems? Let's sit down and talk about the situation at hand. And we talked about this and how I was dealing with Mike and how I was responding to him and what I was suggesting or what I was hearing from him. So it was a situation where I felt I was really counseling with Mike, but I was also being counseled on how to handle this situation. I guess those are the two main situations that come to my mind where there was a good deal of transaction between Pastor Winters and myself on counseling and caring situations. There were numerous others, not so detailed and not so lengthy. The thing I appreciated the most was the knowledge on my part that when a situation like this came up, there wasn't a do not disturb sign on the door, and the door wasn't locked. I had a key anyway, but it wasn't locked. And I could go in, or I could buzz him on the phone and say, hey, this has just come up. Where do we go with it? I think that's what I appreciated the most, and I have to honestly say I was never shut off when I had questions or problems in this kind of a situation. I don't know if you want to respond to either of these situations.
Well, let's hear some more good news from Walt before I ask you for some bad news.
Okay.
Walt, would you want to share one of your experience or several? I should say, both these guys are masters. Bill just finished his master's in music on campus.
Just about finished.
Going back to Minnesota. And Walter's graduate from here just this year and is going for his master's at St. Louis U, right? English Lit.
I don't know, I feel kind of uneasy about sharing these experiences, partially because I guess I always feel kind of uneasy about listening to other fourth-year guys sharing their experiences from Vicarage. It always kind of gives me the same feeling that I have when I listen to McCord talk about his part in the Watergate buggings, because first I feel a little bit titillated and excited by his self-revelation, and then I feel amazed at the way he bungled things, and finally I'm simply bored by his self-importance. And I think fourth-year guys talking about their vicarage experiences are some of the most boring guys in this campus. But that's just a personal feeling. I guess I can give my own subjective experience, and perhaps that will have some value. As Pastor Winters already mentioned, the situation had changed a bit from when Bill was vicaring there. in that I had two supervisors, Bill Hughes and Ed Winters. And so I was kind of reporting to both men and responsible to both men. I'd like to give two experiences that are somewhat similar in character. The first one was a man that I dealt with almost throughout the year who had a tumor on his intestine and then an automobile accident, and before that he had had a stroke, and so he managed to be in the hospital during almost the whole period of my vicarage. And I was given primary responsibility for visiting him. Most of the pastoral care which he got came from me, at least most of the professional pastoral care. He was really a great guy and a fine Christian witness, even in the hospital. But as things kept recurring and kept continuing, he was beginning to ask, I guess, some of the Jobin questions, you know, why are these things happening to me and why do they continue to happen? Why do they never end? And those things really frustrated me a great deal. And I found myself on several occasions talking to both Ed and Bill Hughes, about this particular situation. I think the reason that I was able to talk rather openly about my feelings of inadequacy in dealing with this situation is that they, on their part, had already dealt very frankly with me. And I can think of one particular instance in which Pastor Winters had just visited a young kid about 16 or 17 who had attempted suicide, and he came back from the hospital, and I think Ed was a little broken up about it. And he shared his own feelings with me about that situation. I guess that not only made me feel a little more important, but more important than that, it gave me a feeling of openness when I needed help and when I needed to share things. So that's the first thing, was the openness. And the second thing was the affirmation I got, the affirmation as a fellow helper, as a fellow professional, and also as a fellow Christian. In other words, that I did have something to offer. And I suspect that no matter how self-assured or haughty a vicar seems to be, he needs more affirmation than we suppose. I needed a great deal at that time, because I was not as yet sure that I could really do the job and function in the situation. And this I found both pastors constantly giving me, reassurance and affirmation as a Christian and as a professional, and personal sharing of their faith with me. And in reflecting on this, I think I was able to go back to that situation which I've already briefly outlined to you and give the man what he really needed. Because I began to realize that I didn't need so much more education or more head knowledge. I had quite a bit of that already. I needed affirmation. And by the same token, the man in the hospital needed that kind of affirmation too. He needed the Word of God applied to his particular situation, but he didn't need more education. He didn't need more head knowledge. He knew what the Christian answers were, and now he needed them applied to himself. And so the way in which Ed, I think, worked with me helped me very specifically to work with this man in dealing with his situation. I think I was probably a little more successful in pastoral care with this man because of both the openness and the affirmation that I received from the two pastors. You want me to go on and give the...
Go ahead.
Okay.
He's still asking permission.
Yeah. Right. I almost hesitate to give a negative side because it might give the impression that the vicarage was sort of a 50-50 matter and hit and miss, and it really wasn't. I received a fantastic amount from both men. And... So I hesitate to do this, but I would like to give an instance where I think pastoral care didn't work quite so well because perhaps our relationship was lacking in something, and it was lacking especially in the first few weeks that I was there. In those first few weeks, I was given the assignment, I guess you would say, of calling upon a man who was also dying of cancer. He was a non-member. And he had never had any association with the church, or as he put it, with religion in general. The problem was, once again, by the time I got to him, he was unconscious a great deal of the time, and many times he was almost completely inarticulate, and so I couldn't get much feedback from him, and I didn't know exactly where he was. And I guess I was a little hesitant at that point about approaching Ed for help. I felt, looking back, perhaps a month later, that Pastor Winters should have been a little more aggressive in preparing me for this situation. And of course, that was hindsight, so it was hard to tell. But what happened was that the man died, and his wife had a breakdown. And for a few weeks after that, I think I felt that I was somehow responsible for her breakdown because I didn't possibly prepare her properly or maybe say the right things or do the right things. This situation was cleared up later as I did take the initiative and talk to the pastors, and especially to Ed, about my feelings. And by this time, the relationship had developed to such a degree that these lines of communication were open. So I don't know what the moral of that is. I suppose that it might have something to do with regular meetings and with establishing clear lines of communication at the beginning and not ambiguous lines of communication. At least that's the way I felt in my particular case. In both of these cases that I've mentioned, the key word to me was mutuality. That's what made the first one an overwhelming success and many, many others that I consulted on. And this wasn't an artificial mutuality. I never felt that I had an equal office, no matter how hard you try to imagine it. A vicar is never a pastor. You know, he's always a vicar in some sense of the word. But I felt equal as a human being and equal as a Christian person and equal as a helper, as a man who could help these people in their relationship with Jesus Christ, and that my personal testimony was important. And so I guess, once again, I'd like to emphasize that the affirmation which Pastor Winters gave me was probably the most important thing that happened to me on Vicarage, the affirmation that I could indeed do the job. And that kind of respect and that kind of affirmation will be very important to me in my ministry later.
Maybe what might be helpful is to just help differentiate guys a little bit more so as to what kind of a transaction I had with them or we experienced, to see the different styles of guys and the different needs and interests of each of the persons who were in Vicarage. There was two instances of the seven where the vicar demanded verbatim experiences, where he, in his pastoral caring or pastoral counseling, would put some verbatims together, and we would review them and, you know, share our thoughts and our experiences on the basis of that. I found that to be mutually enriching, because I hadn't done that for a long time. But this was what they wanted, and this was more than once throughout the year. It took time. All of this takes time, obviously. But it was their way of saying, let's be connected. There was one vicar, I remember, I felt I was not the one that was able to reach communication-wise with him, talking about counseling and caring ministry. So I suggested he talk to social workers in my parish or our congregation, who happened to be very sensitive and very astute people. Another instance where there was a shared, supervision, not with Baumgartner or Bill Hughes now, but with another pastor in town who seemed to be the guy that this particular vicar felt was the guy he could talk to. So we had sort of a trilogue going on. And I guess that's why I'm talking before, that not all vicars are gifted carers and counselors. Not all pastors are gifted carers and counselors. If you have some gifts, you may not have all of them. You may not be the one to be the most helpful and facilitative in a guy's learning and growing. So there is that sort of thing. Bunch of questions, I guess. I'll start with the last one. Sure, it's threatened. Nobody likes it. You know, that's, after all, this is, you know, I am the pastor sort of thing, and I am the supervisor, and sure, it's threatened. But I don't think the point of, you know, diminishing my sense of dignity and worth. Why? Because both the vicar involved and the other pastor who picked up this responsibility were free enough, and I guess I'll use Walt's term, were aggressive enough in their care about me and my feelings of threat to move over and say, hey, everything's all right. Okay? And also, as I recall, it was not a thing where the guy was all of a sudden on the staff. I didn't have that kind of at-homeness kind of feeling. He was not on the staff. But he was somebody that you go to, like you shoot pool with and have a few beers, you know, at somebody's house. That kind of a concept, you know. That was the feeling we had. But did I feel threatened? Sure. These may or may not be some worthwhile things for you to even bother to put down, but I'm going to give you a couple of, I think, catch-all phrases and words that have lots of things wrapped up in them. If you want to call them loaded phrases, okay. I prefer to use them as just summary phrases or statements that will get at some of the things that Sachleben and others are wondering about, making contact, making some recommendations. What goes on? I'll preface it by saying that as I operate now, I chose this because of time and everything else, I operate now in the way that Seward Hiltner does in his book, The Counselor in Counseling. He says there are three parts in counseling, of course. There is the counselor himself, there's the counselee, and then there's the transaction, or the interaction. And that's nothing great or fantastic. But what he does say is he says he's going to focus on the counselor, because that's, you know, where you're going to find out an awful lot about your transaction and about yourself in transaction with others, because that's the best and most available data and material, yourself. So that's what I'm going to go after in hopes of focusing on transaction and the person over there. On the basis of some of the things that Walt and Bill have said, and some of the things they have not said, I'm going to ask Walt to add to it if he wants to, I feel that there are two things that are always necessarily operative in vicar-supervisor transaction. One is do the best you can to be in touch with and at home with yourself. Be in touch with and at home with yourself. And I'll unravel that a little bit. And two, or B, be in touch with and at home with the vicar as a person. Be in touch with and at home with the vicar as a person. Under the be at home with and be in touch with yourself, I have a couple of things that you may get upset about, and maybe you won't. I don't know. It's up to you. But here are some things that I have experienced I think you might want to think about. On the top of the list, I find, is being able to be aware of, and that is sensitive, and to be able to accept the position of authority. The whole matter of authority, you know, whose authority? What is my authority. Can I be in authority? Am I afraid to be in authority? Figure. These kinds of dynamics are present very much of the time, and I feel that they ought to be dealt with as quickly and as honestly as possible. Just as an aside, I found that I had one heck of a time assuming the authoritative position. That's not my personality. That's not my bag. But I found that something was missing in the transaction. If I completely ignored that, I say, well, I'll leave that to somebody else. Say, let God do it, or let the Bible do it, or let, you know, somebody else do it. That was what Rollo May calls that pseudo-innocence. You know, I didn't ask to be born, sort of thing. That's not the way God made me. But I found out the transaction between Vicar and myself was missing out on something if I did not deal with that in a much more aggressive and open way. Number two, as Dr. Teachin reminded us so strongly and so very lovingly and pastorally, is your being confident in your role and your function as not only a supervisor, but as a pastor. And I'll insert something here to help explain why I think this is very, very important. In the district, English district, I'm a member of a commission called the Commission on Ministerial Health, with professionals that are way beyond my ball field and my abilities. I find that this statement, this concern, this focus is very, very crucial, even more so today. I'm no alarmist or anything. I'm simply saying that we see this as a dialogical item again and again and again. The matter of confidence in your role and your function as a minister in Jesus Christ. This will directly affect how you feel confident in your role and your function as a supervisor. Number three, there ought to be somehow or other some ways that you make it obvious that you are willing to risk relaxation of your defensiveness. We can talk about that for hours, I'm sure. But I find that even in myself, every single time, not even, but in myself as well and continually so, that when a brand new person comes by, what goes up but all kinds of defenses, you know? That has to be dealt with as quickly as possible. The relaxation of your defensiveness. Number four, almost along with that, is having a capacity or knowing your capacity. I'm talking here mainly about your being aware of yourself, so you're being in touch with and being at home with yourself in these various ways, into these various extents and dimensions. The capacity, having the capacity to risk vulnerability. To risk vulnerability. That's a stolen phrase from Wallace Fisher's book, I know. But it says an awful lot in this case, in this kind of situation as well. To risk vulnerability. I find that being a supervisor also involves the risk of vulnerability. You can get hurt. You can bleed. You can bruise. And you'll find out about it. Okay? Number five is having a readiness to be a participant, a readiness to be a participant in creative tension. I like the word conflict better, but I think that's kind of a red flag word, and it has all kinds of things in your agendas, I'm sure, as to what conflict is all about. I would prefer to say creative tension, therefore. And there will be tension. And God's at work creatively with it. Number six is the willingness to make your caring available. The willingness to make your caring available. That too is very, very important. We talk about being a pastor, to be in our own pastoral caring ministry, our own counseling ministry. Why not have it show up, say, in your relationship with your vicar? Let him know you care. And, you know, and as Ed Westling says, I remember one book, I think it's What's the Good Word? He says, that doesn't mean you have to be so affectionately involved, but at times it might not be a bad idea. Let him know you care about him as a person. Number seven. This one has been tough for me to swallow, simply because I, like all other human beings, don't like to face up to this reality. But to be in touch with and at home with yourself to the extent that you are open to the possibility of failure. I'd like someday, this is an aside, for some of our theologians, if not many of them, to come up with a theology of failure. I think we need an awful lot of instruction along those lines and a great deal of training. I find it's with us so much. We're afraid to fail. You can read in what you want with that. But I find it's very, very difficult for us to deal with that. But I think it's absolutely necessary for a healthy and happy transaction. Number eight. Now, I'll give you some crucifixion. Now, I'll give you a little resurrection. Enjoy the privilege of the relationship. I find that, you know, many times the vicars all of a sudden are gone from the scene, and I forget to appreciate what was already there. And it's a privilege. I'm not going to jump into platitudinous, you know, level now, but it is a privilege. It's a gift to be in relationship, no matter what kind of relationship it is, even the kind that says, you failed, you guy. You didn't make it. You just didn't make it. That's a privilege to be involved in that process. Okay, B. To be in touch with and at home with the vicar as a person. I think it's very important. I believe it's very important for us to accept right away that here is a person that has been given gifts. And then added to that, you could say, gifts that perhaps you don't have, or possibly you don't have. And that's where the threat comes in, that's where the tension comes in, and that's where, you know, all kinds of things come in. This guy's got something that I don't have, and I'd be darned if I'm going to let it get out or be known. We play that game, you know. We play that game. And it's interesting that while I conduct a book reading group every month, which gets involved in novels and things, I think he only had one experience with that. See? I never told him this before, but he posed a threat. A guy, an English major, English literature major? No, you know. Let's not have him there. But it's there, okay? He has gifts that I don't have and that I have no business blocking. And that's what John was talking about, too, and before him, Paul. Number two, also to be in touch with and at home with the vicar as a person to the extent that you take time and you bother. I like the word bother, because we don't like to be bothered these days. And everybody seems to be bothering us, but to be bothered to take the time to discover that he has his own expectations or dreams or visions, whatever you want to call it, but I call it expectations. And also his apprehensions. He's got some apprehensions. And I Walt was saying that right from the start. It was kind of a lonely, you know, African kind of situation where he had apprehensiveness, but nobody felt it. Nobody picked it up, see. Number three, to be in touch with and at home with the vicar as a person so that you realize that he, like you and like I, has great, like I do, has a great need of helpful relationships. And I can underscore that again and again and again in view of my experiences in Commission of Ministerial Health for the past 6 years. There's a great need for helpful relationship. And then, fourthly, here's a being in touchness that I could call it this. Know that he wants to be able to share where he is as well as where he is not in terms of being a caring and counseling person. And Walt very aptly described that for me and for us when he said that there ought to have been more aggressiveness in this situation, and perhaps others as well, to find out that he would like an opportunity to say, this is where I is and this is where I ain't, insofar as being a caring and counseling person goes. It's very important for him to be able to say that. These are some of the things, of many things, that go through my mind, or went through my mind in preparation for today. I'd like to open this up before getting into a few readings and perhaps some wrap-up by having you guys respond to this, asking questions about it, if you will.
I would like to comment on the relationship that you have had as far as a personal sharing in terms of a devotional life, etc., or if you do it as a staff, or is this something that's a part of the relationship with the vicar?
I remember one year there was a personal relationship with a vicar in that way, yes, in a weekly manner. Another year it was a staff experience, and, you know, other ways it was none at all. But I think, yeah, that's one I would see as being very valuable. And probably I'm admitting that it is no excuse whatsoever to say we don't have time for it. But I think you do. You very much do, because as I firmly believe, in the case of the congregation in general, I believe here in particular, that the liturgy and worship life affords you a tremendous opportunity to go through this and make contact with all of these things we're talking about. I believe that very firmly. It's true on weekend retreats. You know, we go away and do it, but we don't do it every day here. Discipline to do that is fine, yeah. Yes. Did that right when you started?
First day came, it was one of the things that, in terms of divided ministry, divided loyalty, and that can really raise some defensive problems when you find he's taking sides in the business.
There's no response to that, if I may. There's a current situation I have where I knew, and he knew, that we had entirely different styles of ministry and conceptions of ministry. And also we have widely different theological, philosophical stances. Well,
tremendous thing to inherit, you know. But I made a choice of just, you know, getting on to the business of ministry and not bothering to talk about it until he's ready to, or until we can lower our, you know, our fists a little bit, so to speak, or let down our walls a little bit more. Or right away, let's just sit down and have out with it. Thing. I chose the latter. I prefer to do it that way. I'm not the kind of a guy that likes to have things hang on, even though I stand with openness in, you know, consultation situations, you know. But if it's a one-to-one thing, I've got to keep at it with you. So we did it, and we spent a whole week on it. And it's been very, very helpful. We still disagree, you know, in many respects, but we know our ground rules. We know our ground rules. So it doesn't crop up at the worst of times, you know, when the folks are sitting there wondering, what in the world's going on, you know, between you two guys, or three guys, as in this instance. It was a trilogical situation. Yeah, that's important. But I should also say that it is very important within the first couple of weeks, maybe that's going to come up in your part of things, but in the first couple of weeks, and I'll just reinforce it by saying it's actual and it's really necessary, in the first couple of weeks to really become acquainted with each other. I don't mean now that you got to go out to movies every night and go to one another's house and all that, but make it your business to find out, you know, to get in touch with each other. Because that's what's happening anyway, you know. You're going on with this. How can we reach each other? Or what's he thinking about now? See? And it's mostly a personal thing, you know, that's going on. It's not the professional thing so much yet. But you haven't had a chance to expose yourself. You know, I haven't. Neither has the vicar. But to find one another out soon is very important. Yes.
Wouldn't it be nice if between that and they wouldn't disagree without talking privately?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
There has been, right, there, okay, but I should also say that it is his part of creative tension, that even if you know you disagree, there have been times where I have said, and I know Bill Hughes has said, before him Baumgartner has said, that you are free to say what's on your mind. But you made a contract before then, see?
And before we get too far into matters of relationships and getting off to a good start, which is tomorrow morning.
Okay.
I think the questions are starting to come in that direction. Could you also say something about areas in which vicars want to get involved in counseling? Specific, all vicars seem to come out and say, I want to counsel. And then when the year is over, they say, I had no opportunities.
Okay. May I shift this over to Walt to ask him what ways he feels that if there were times, there just might have been, that you would want to have been involved in more counseling or caring. Because I get that.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there was a great deal of that. We had some unique experiences in which I was able to do not only some hospital counseling, but some marriage counseling. We had a very difficult situation in which our youth counselors were getting a divorce, which created all kinds of problems. But I really didn't feel that as a lack. I would emphasize those initial meetings that Ed briefly referred to, though. And as the year went along, I felt, you know, I said that at the beginning I was rather shy about asking him, but as the year went along, I felt able to ask him to be involved in specific situations. And so I didn't see that as a problem in my particular vicarage. At least as far as I can remember right now.
There have been, with the interest in group process more and more these days, this is where the guys are asking things. How do you get involved in group counseling? And I'll share something that's not really official yet, but I'm preparing the congregation to accept the eventuality, I hope within a year and a half, of having professionals train lay people in group counseling, which means that the pros will not be on the scene when it's happening. And that would involve, you know, be part of the vicar's training. They ask that an awful lot. you know, to get into that and conjoint family therapy and all that sort of thing. Maybe not as heavy, but that's an area that's brand new and needs some structure, needs some work and some training. And I can see it as coming in the future. Yeah. But otherwise, guys are free to get involved in things. Have you ever heard? Suicidal, all kinds of things.
I don't know what this is pertinent to this or not. I'm always looking at this whole thing from my own viewpoint, which is that of pastor with an associate. And now in comes the vicar. Now all of these things you said here, see, I'm looking all over at my other man, besides myself and him. Can you say something about that? I know that's very general.
Yeah, give me something to deal with. But you're the one to answer that. I'm not purposely playing the old game of, you know, how do you feel about it, you know. But really, how do you feel about it? And just how do you feel about it is very important. And also, can you risk that? That's very important. If you can't, then the best you don't. Talk about it, though, you know, but and be honest with it. Be very genuine and say, hey, I can't, you know. But... you might be, I'll put it this way, you might be missing out on an awful lot. I'll step up and be the advisor for a moment. If you don't involve all three, you might be missing out on something.
Yeah, in my experience, I was responsible to Pastor Hughes primarily in those areas where he had specific congregational responsibility, and I was responsible to Ed in those areas where he had the greater degree of responsibility. So I guess that's the way we solved it. Ed wrote out most of my report information, but then Bill always looked it over, and I discussed it with both of them. So and it was a divided type thing.
I've picked up that already before, and in certain areas, like if it will deal with the associate more than with me, because there are some areas that I can comment, that's open to all.
Right, well, okay. That's terrific if you can feel free to do that. Because it's such a huge area, you know, that and carry.
Well,
that happens.